All right, so we just read the opening chapter, the opening of chapter 20, and basically we can sum up the story as follows. Miriam passes away. Immediately after Miriam passes away, it tells us that they don't have any water to drink. They're in a desert. You're in a desert, no water. Bad. Not good, obviously. The Talmud immediately tells us that here we learn that Miriam, that in the merit of Miriam, there was the well of Miriam, the Be'er Miriam, that traveled with them in the 40 years in the desert, and now they needed another means to have water, right? That's how the Talmud and the Midrash explain it. The people start complaining. We're not very familiar with this. The language is very clear. Why are we dying, etc.? Now, it sounds like, how can they keep complaining like this? But the truth is that if you're in a desert and you don't have water or food, you're not going to be happy. I mean, I've seen it with Kiddush, right? So if you have a couple of people with Kiddush, Shelly, we need another book. So if you have people that you don't feed the people, they get really cranky, right? So you can imagine that there's 2 million people, and they're upset, and they're potentially, the language that they say is pretty pretty fierce, pretty strong.
And you've learned a lesson from Korah,
right? Or
people complain and they kill them.
So there are two ways to look at this. Number one is, should they have learned the lesson from Korah? Number two is that this is a different generation, as I was about to point out. This is, remember now, most likely 38 years later. Miriam dies, right? Miriam dies in the 40th year. Korah, according to most explanations, takes place after, or either before, the sin of the spies, which is in year 1.5. So this is 38 years later, which means that we're talking to two full generations later. It's a different group of people, which is important to note this as we go through the explanation.
Aren't they still getting the manna?
Yeah. Cloud, the glory, the whole thing. Right?
So they weren't getting water?
So the water stopped. The question is why? So as I said, the Midrash says the water stopped. Clearly they need water now, right? For whatever reason. Whether there was miraculous water that went with Miriam whenever Miriam went, and when she died, that ceased to exist. Or they had pit stops all around, right? Which probably...
Well, ran dry,
whatever it is. I mean, either way, it was a miraculous well. Or they had water. There were civilizations all around. They were able to get water, and now they ran out. And you're in a desert, and it's hot. And people are, they're worried about dying.
How do we know there was a change in generation? Yeah.
Because Miriam died.
So?
Miriam dies in the 40th year. Aaron dies in the next verse. Aaron dies in the 40th year.
Oh.
Where does it say in the 40th year? Aaron dies in the 40th year. It tells us it's in the... Yeah, it's in the 40th year.
But they do ask why people
were right away. Meaning the language is not much different than it was in their parents and their grandparents before, which is, why did you bring us here to die? Every time, right? I'm not saying they're not justified, because it's not, because if you don't have water, you're going to die in the desert, right? But
my point is, so wouldn't that have been an older generation saying that?
Well, they obviously got it from somewhere, right? Remember the thing, the commercial, parents who use drugs have children who use drugs, right? So parents who complain have children who complain. It's a very important lesson, by the way, because I often remind myself, my wife is perfect, but I remind myself that we shouldn't be complaining about people, things, teachers, etc., because they're all listening, right? So the next generation is listening. They're using the same language as their parents did. They are. Could be that this isn't part of our DNA, but Moshe's response is, what is Moshe's response? They fall on the face. They don't know what to do, and so God replies and says, "Okay, we have a solution. There's a legitimate complaint. We have a solution. Here's the solution. Take your staff, and you will speak to the rock, you and Aaron, and then then when he does, Moshe instead yells at the people, Shimunu Amaram, listen up, you rebels! Smashes the rock. The water comes out." Except then God tells him that because you didn't sanctify me, you will be punished and you will die in the desert. You will not enter the land. End of story. So we have obvious questions, right? What's our obvious questions?
Why did God tell him to take his staff?
What did he need a staff for, right? If he was supposed to speak to the rock, why did he need a staff for? Question number one. Question number two.
Is it really so less miraculous to get water from the rock than the east, right?
What's the big deal, right? I tried hitting the rock like crazy. It didn't work, right? There's no water in the rock.
I
didn't have the right stick, right? I didn't have the right staff. I didn't have the right rock, whatever it is. What's the difference? In other words, I think what Sharon's question is an excellent one. At the end of the day, if you're saying that you didn't perform a great miracle, you're right. Speaking to the rock and then the rock responding, that's a good thing, right? But if he hit the rock, that's also a pretty impressive thing. And remember, to the 2.5 to 2 million people who are dying of thirst and their animals, etc., there's a ton of water that just came out of this rock. They're not any less impressed, as Sharon pointed out. Yes. What else? What other question?
Why was this necessary anyway? If they were near town, they could
have gone. So could be that maybe where they are now, they're not near a town. There is no water. That's what we know. It's not accessible. Either, which is why the rabbis want to say, the Midrash wants to say that there was a miraculous well that followed them around. Could be, whatever. But either way, right now the water isn't accessible. They don't have water. They're dying of thirst. And there's going to be a panic. There is a panic. I once took a flight to Israel on an airline that remained nameless, but it's the national airline of Israel. And we had this brilliant idea that we would have some sort of meat sandwich before we left. And we get there, of course, on the plane, and we're dying of thirst. They're so thirsty. And they don't give us, they give you like a little. You're like, can I have water, please? And I got four kids with me, or whatever, how many kids I have. Yeah, I have four kids, right? And they give us this little thing of water, like a little kind of cup with it, like whatever. And you're like still parched, whatever. And you're there for another 10 hours. And you get a little crazy, and your kids get a little crazy. So you can imagine the pandemonium that's going to happen, right? As well as you can imagine the concern by Moshe, because we've been through this before, at least he has, and there was pandemonium, and there was chaos, and the people rebelled. People were rebelling. We talked about this last week. People rebel. It's not just, oh, they're complaining and they're protesting. They're going to go crazy. They're going to kill them. It's going to be complete chaos, right? There's no police, so to speak. There's a certain decorum that you have to keep. What other questions do we have?
What happened to the 38 years?
Yeah, apparently not much happened, right? It must have been very boring. In Parshat Matot Matzei, it'll tell us. They went here, and they went here, and they went here, and they went here. What did they do there? I don't know. We talked about last week how this must have been this very sad state of a people that's on a mission to nowhere, knowing that that is. But they just skipped it because there was nothing relevant there. Yes.
In sentence 7, it says, Hashem spoke to Moses.
Yeah.
Stay after. And then it says, number 9, Moses took the staff. And then later on it says, Moses raised his hand and struck the rock. But then in 12, it says that Hashem spoke to Moses and Aaron because you did not move. What did Aaron do?
Excellent question. What did Aaron do? Aaron was just part of the ride. He didn't actually do anything. He was just standing next to him. If I'm Aaron, I should turn and say, what did I do?
So is that what he didn't do? He didn't speak up? Or he didn't stop?
We're going to discuss it. It's a legitimate question, right?
Guilty by association.
Well, guilty by association? Okay, but this is a pretty extreme punishment, right? The punishment is that your whole mission in life, right? Remember, we spend a lot of time on Pesach, right? Pesach's important. Moses led the Jewish people out of Egypt. Oh, that's very nice. That was not the mission. The mission was get out of Egypt, receive the Torah, enter the land, become a nation, right? You're not a nation unless you have a land. So this was their agenda. They got 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3 ain't bad. They didn't finish. Your lifelong mission is not fulfilled. You're going to die in the desert. Yes.
So it seems to me from all this that after 38 years, God is still testing them, and they're failing the test.
So that's a given, right? The people are failing the test, right? Because they don't. What they should say is, "Dear God, please provide us. Thank you for providing us." But again, keep in mind, dying of thirst is a terrible, terrible death. It's a terrible. People are, you know, I'm sure the people are getting very sick, right? And there's no hope in sight. So yes, it's a test, and they don't pass the test. But at the end, the people aren't punished. Moshe and Aaron are punished.
Because Moses failed the test too.
So did Moses fail the test? So here's my next question to follow up with Susan. Moses fails the test, right? And therefore he's punished and he's condemned to die in the desert, right? No better than all those people from before him. And why doesn't Moshe apologize? Right? Did something wrong. I recognize I did something wrong. So what should you do? You should say, I'm sorry. Throughout the book of Devarim, incidentally, it's mentioned no less than, I think, 3 or 4 times that God says, here's the land, but because you did, even right before he dies, right before he takes his life and says you're going to die, and then he says, and because you did not, because of the sin of Amorim, etc., you're not going to enter the land. It's almost like God's like sticking his nose in it a little bit. And at some point, you would assume Moshe would say, I'm really sorry. I'm really, really sorry. Right? Could you ever forgive me? He does this, by the way, for all the Jewish people every time, right? Here, he fails to do that. So we're not even sure or clear what Moshe did wrong. We assume that he hit the rock. As Sharon says, big deal, right? Again, God is angry and says, because you do not believe in me to sanctify me in the eyes of the children of Israel. What do you mean I didn't believe in you? I didn't believe in you? I hit the rock. By the way, there's another scene. In Parshat Mashalach, first time the Jewish people, we should see it. Take your magic ribbon, put it over here, and turn to Parshat Mashalach, in the middle of the story of the Exodus, right after the splitting of the sea. We kind of forget this story because we're so focused on the big splash of the splitting of the sea. Haha, pun intended, right? If you look on page 173, verse 22. Chapter 15, verse 22. Moses caused Israel to journey from the Sea of Reeds, and they went to the wilderness of Shur. They went for a 3-day period in the wilderness, but they did not find water. They came to Marah, and they could not drink the waters of Marah because they were bitter. Therefore, that's not what I wanted. Wrong story. Sorry. The story is on chapter 17, verse 1. My apologies. Chapter 17, verse 1, page 177. The entire assembly of children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin to their journeys according to the word of Hashem. They encamped in Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Again, you're in a desert. Water is a really big deal. Water is a really big deal. The people contended with Moses, and they said, give us water that we may drink. Moses said to them, why do you contend with me? Why do you test Hashem? The people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses, and it said, why is it that you brought us from Egypt to kill me and my children and my livestock through for thirst? This is what the people said. You brought us to Egypt to kill us. Same language, right? Why? Moses cried out to God and said, what should I do for this people? A bit more, and they will stone me. And Hashem said to Moses, pass before the people to take with you some of the elders of Israel, and in your hand take a staff which you struck the river. And go, and behold, I shall stand before you by the rock and Horeb. You shall strike it, and the rock and the water will come forth from the people, and the people will drink. Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He called the place Massah Meribah. When the last time, 40 years earlier, when there was no water and there was a crisis, God told Moses, I can take water out of a rock. Ta-da! All you need to do is take your staff that you split the sea with. Remember? They waved it, whatever, and the sea split. Take that staff and strike the rock, and the water will come out. 40 years later, it's deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra used to say, and says, okay, same story, but this time, the instructions are a little bit different. He tells them to speak to the rock, but Moshe hits the rock. And as Aaron said, big deal, whoop-de-doo. So we didn't pay attention to the, right? My wife always tells me when I go shopping, pay attention to the list, right? I wrote specific instructions. I said, what's the difference if it's this, if it's that? I got the milk, right? No, you need this milk and that, whatever. It's that. Yes. All men know about this, right? just follow the list, right? But so he didn't follow instructions. Okay, he didn't follow instructions. Men don't like instructions. They don't follow instructions.
Wasn't
the first time. Not going to be the last time, right? Yes.
If someone would read this, you think that God is really very, very
or unfair.
Or unfair.
Does the punishment fit the crime? I mean, come on. So he was off by a little bit. He still did everything, right? And here's God, and God's angry and whatever. So exactly, it doesn't seem, first of all, you don't have to be not Jewish. Even the Jews, I'm reading this, and I say, this is Moses, he worked so hard, right? He's such a tragic figure. He gave up everything, he worked for Jews, right? Oh my gosh, how hard is that, right? Yes, honey.
It was predestined. God didn't want him to go in, and that was just an excuse not to let him.
Okay, so what we're saying, what Arnie is proposing is that this scene, I don't want to say it's predestined, because we still have an idea of free choice, right? In other words, if Moshe does everything he's supposed to do, then this conversation doesn't happen, right? So, or at least...
Well, there would be something else he would find.
Yeah. He could find. In other words, so God is saying, the question then is why? Then the question is, why shouldn't Moshe go into the land?
Because he doesn't want anyone from that generation.
Why? Yoshua and Kalev are going in.
Well, yes. Somebody has to lead them.
So, okay.
Aren't they younger?
They're not much younger. There's a perception that Yehoshua, who's called a nar, is young, right?
Well, he lived a lot longer than Moses.
No, he didn't. He lived 110 years. Moses lived 120.
No, so, but I'm saying he lived
a few years longer. No, so he was a few years younger. According to him, I believe he was 92 years old. Okay. Or something like that. Somewhere 80-something years old. And Kalev, we'll see we read that a couple weeks ago, maybe not in this class, we read somewhere that Kalev in the Sefer Yeshua says he's 85 years old. Right? So, I mean, these aren't young whippersnappers, right? These are...
You're right.
They're younger. But still, it doesn't answer the question. But there were plenty of people who were younger than Moshe, right? Moshe started this job when he was 80 years old. It's like running for president, like Joe Biden, right? So, so God bless him. He looks good for 80. Yes, he's almost 80. Yeah.
76 is not almost 80.
That's the point that God wanted someone younger to bring the people in.
Why?
To be their leader.
Why?
Because he was getting old.
So what?
So what?
By the way, at some point, at least the Midrash says, in the description of Parsha Batzvana, that Moshe says, maybe I could just go in and I could be a regular balabas. I can then just be a regular congregant, right? And I always tell the story. I shouldn't tell the story on tape. But I always tell the story. Chevy once came up with this line and said, you know why Moshe couldn't? No, Moshe couldn't just come into the land of Israel and just be a congregant like everybody else, which is what he was requesting from the Midrash, because the Rabbi Emeritus thing doesn't work so well. It just doesn't work. It just, trust me. If I could just say, I'm on to record. Rabbi Wahlberg was very good. He left. He said, I'm not going to be here. And that was the best thing to happen to me. Yes. So, yes, Pat.
But if he asked God for forgiveness God
have allowed him in. So I don't have an answer for that.
You're
always supposed to ask three times. There were several Yom Kippurs throughout this, right? I don't have the answer to that. What I do know is that, at least in the text, we never see him say, gee, I'm really sorry. I really feel bad for what I did. It was a huge mistake, right? Yes, Ira.
In the beginning, he was saved because of water.
And now this is the demise. There is some poetry. And probably his greatest moment was in the middle of the water, if you wanted to, if you're writing a little poem here, which we're not. But we're, yes.
Little chapter 7:13.
Yeah.
What does that understand? What does it mean, and he, God, was sanctified through them? At the end of 13.
They are the waters of strife when the children of Israel contended with Hashem, and he was sanctified through them, through the waters, through the people, through the... So, to answer your question, I don't know. And by the way, I'm not alone. Because rabbis, or commentators and interpreters of this text, have been wrestling with what really is going on for a long time. For a long time. When I say a long time, meaning everybody, there are, I can list you probably a dozen different interpretations. We're going to highlight a couple of them along the way. And generally speaking, when you find many interpretations, it means nobody likes any of them. All right? Because they're not satisfied. Nobody's satisfied with them, so you'll find many interpretations.
So we're going to highlight a couple of them and maybe get a flavor of what's happening here. But this is one of the more enigmatic scenes in all of the Bible. Yes?
We could go back and talk about the 13 attributes of God. It doesn't translate.
He doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem fair. So if that's the case, so we have two ways of looking at it. Either Moshe did something wrong here, right? And therefore God doesn't seem fair. And some explanation is because he was such a great tzaddik, such a righteous person, that even the most smallest infraction, what we would think would be nothing, actually was such a great sin, and God punishes according to his righteousness. That's one best logical explanation. Or, as Arnie was trying to point out, perhaps he didn't do anything wrong, and this was just something that had to happen, right? Although the language is quite fierce. Either way, there's nothing that's 100% satisfactory. It's important that we're analyzing this, because we're going to see it on both sides. Anyone else before we jump in? Okay. So let's propose a few thoughts, right? What did Moshe do wrong? He hit the rock. What shouldn't he have done? He should have spoken to the rock. Right? Why? Why? What's the difference? Why does God tell him then not to speak to the rock, but to hit the rock? And God tell him now to speak to the rock and not hit the rock?
Striking is a more violent way to do
so. So why did he tell him then to do that? 38 years ago, this is what he told them to do. These were instructions.
38 years earlier, they were looking for all kinds of miracles, and there isn't God out there to begin with.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. And it happened to be they just walked through water, which was a pretty good one.
You know there is a God, but uh-huh. God knows he's full power.
So we are...
Right.
We're coming through an interesting speculation and saying, these are very different people. Right? These are very different people. We once taught this class. I really like this answer, if I remember. And the class that we explained was... what the possibility is that maybe this is not it's not a punishment, but a consequence. Maybe. Because Moshe is he's now the older generation. And not that the older generation, there's anything wrong with the older generation. But you've ever heard that conversation where you say, you know, you have to learn how to communicate with kids these days, right? There's a generation gap. It's funny because, like, here I am thinking, I know how old I am, right? And I'm thinking, there's no generation gap, we're older, whatever. There's a huge generation gap, and I understand now what my father talked about with his parents, or specifically, it was a huge generation gap, the Europeans who came in to America, and then they have these kids who are, you know, who see their parents as immigrants and don't understand how to talk to them, they don't learn the language, they don't even know how to speak or what's going on, and now suddenly, because of the information age, things are moving so fast, I don't understand anything my kids are there. Everything's in an acronym or an emoji, right? And I don't know how to relate to that either, and it's a generation gap. And so, what Arnie was saying, what we were saying before, is that maybe they're too old. It's not that they're too old. It's that they're thinking differently. And specifically, what you were saying before, because wait a second, 40 years ago, he was told to hit the rock. Right? He hits the rock and the water comes out. Now, that seems violent. That seems strong, right? But in fact, if you're speaking to a generation that just came out of slavery, that's the language that they know. That's the language that they know is say, hey, smack the rock. God, you listen to God. The rock listens to God. 40 years later, 38 years later, it's 40 years later actually, 40 years later, the scene is the same, but the people are different. The leader is the same. And Moshe says, smacks the rock, and says, Shimuna Hamorim, listen up, you rebels. And God says, wait a second, you can't talk to the people this way. They're a different generation. They're different. They didn't grow up in slavery. You need to communicate, right? You have to learn how to communicate. I remember talking to a European in Montreal, someone who wherever, and I said he was having issues with his son, and I said, you need to learn how to talk to him. Right? You need to learn how to talk. It doesn't work this way in the next generation. You have to approach it very differently. Well, Moshe is approaching this in the same way that he did them from the previous generation. And God says, you can't. That's not how it works. That doesn't necessarily fully answer the question about Kadesh, that it's sanctified, right? That it's they didn't sanctify me. I'm going to give another explanation in just a moment. It doesn't necessarily explain it fully, right? But it does say, makes sense, that this is a consequence. That Moshe and Aaron, who was in the previous leadership, Aaron didn't do anything. But they can't lead the people out. It's just a consequence. You need someone who's younger, who speaks their language and understands that this is a different generation that needs to be led in a different model. Yeah.
The only way to catch their attention is to
provide water. If the water comes out, you can imagine the scene, right? Moshe gets, I always wonder how he did this, how did he project his voice in front of 2 million people, right? Without a mic, right? Without the mic, right? And he got up and he gathers the people around and the people are watching and they're saying, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Will it work? And it does. By the way, if he did something wrong, why did it work? If he didn't do the instructions that God told him to do, it shouldn't have worked. It's a miracle, right? It shouldn't have worked. But Sharon's saying it didn't matter. So according to that explanation, according to this, what we just said, it was just a consequence. Moshe and Aaron can't lead this people. They need to stay. It's interesting, by the way, that there's an opinion, I think it's the Shaddal, or Minas, they said there's so many opinions here, but there's an opinion that says that actually this whole scene is hiding the truth. That this took place to really to hide the truth of what happened, of why they really didn't enter the land. Well, let's look at their resume, right? Moshe and Aaron are great people, but they have a little red flag on their resume. What's Aaron's red flag? The golden calf. What's Moshe's red flag, according to this explanation, the Shaddai? What did Moshe do wrong? What? No, actually, according to some, that could be, but he didn't seem to be. God never criticized him for that, which is interesting. That's another whole, when we get there, we'll talk about it. Why God never.
What's not a good father?
What?
He wasn't a good father.
Okay, that's apparently not a crime. Right? There is no mitzvah to be a good parent, believe it or not. There's a mitzvah to honor your parents, there's no mitzvah to love your children. It doesn't exist. That's another talk in another class, but it's fascinating. It is fascinating. And sometimes when my kids drive me crazy, I point this out. Moshe, if we remember from last week's portion, Moshe sends the spies. And we're unclear whether, actually that was 2 weeks ago, we're unclear whose idea was it. It's not clear. In Devarim, he clearly implies that it wasn't his idea, it was the people's idea. It was God's idea. It doesn't clear. What we do know is that Moshe gives a lot of instructions. And he says, go check out the land to see if it's fat or lush or not lush, to see if it's fortified or not fortified, to see what kind of cities there are, etc., etc. Why do you do that? Why do you do that? According to at least this explanation, that was wrong. Because he didn't need to do that. The people needed to just go in, see the land, and leave. He doesn't have to give them or feed them what will end up becoming, which is exactly we had this conversation with Arnie. They're like, why? They lied. They didn't lie. The spies told the truth. They answered Moshe's questions. Moshe shouldn't have asked those questions, right? Why? Because God told him
about taking you into the land.
Moshe didn't need this. He didn't tell the people, don't worry, God's going to provide. The even Saron, Kumayon, Moshe, Kuma, Hashem, Yafutso, Aydaka. The enemy, the ark is going to come, the people will run away. I don't need details. Details, who cares? Whatever's going to happen, God's going to take care of this. This is all miraculous. Moshe gave too much detailed instructions. He just should have said, check it out, come back, tell us a good report. Right? That's it. And according to the Shaddal, according to this explanation, he did something wrong, and that as a punishment, the text wanted to sort of hide what really is the reason why they were condemned to die in the land. And so they tell this story, but it's really the two primary scenes of the two primary sins of the desert, which is the golden calf, and the spies, and they're punished for their roles in them. That's a fascinating explanation. it's not necessarily correct, but it is a fascinating explanation, which then we continue to jive and say, well, maybe this was a consequence. And why does God sell this whole thing? Well, he had to cover up a whole, what's the real story. Yes?
Seems like God set him up. Where do you get the idea of seven despising God?
The spies. Well, that's unclear.
Says,
right, but then if you look at the text in Parshat Devarim, he tells it a different story, and we've discussed that, but we don't know really what happened, right? And then Shlach Lecha Anashim, send it for yourself. And even if God sends it to send him up, then why did he give all the details? So again, according to this explanation, Moshe did something wrong there. It's unclear if that's correct, because again, everybody's looking for some sort of explanation, and maybe we can jive it all together. Still, yes.
But the people were not willing to believe Joshua and Caleb either. And what were the chances that if Moses accompanied them, they would believe or be willing to? I mean, I think the Rabbi Emeritus thought is a little bit more weightier, quite honestly. In the same way that you don't know where Moses is buried, they didn't want to canonize Moses.
Right. Yeah. They didn't want.
So perhaps if he had been there, they would not have been able to be passed over to another leader.
Right. I would agree. And so according to this, it sort of makes sense. The text itself, though, doesn't really jive with it. You have to say that, well, in this argument, that the text is sort of there to cover over everything.
Okay, but if it's covering over the other, it could just as easily be covering over.
Right, possible. I want to share two other thoughts, and we only have a few minutes, believe it or not. I'm sorry, but we could spend another hour on this. I want to share two other ideas. One, I believe, was from the Abarbanel. And there are many others. The Ramban says he was upset because he got angry. You're not supposed to get angry, and he was punished for being angry. It was the Rambam. The Rambam says he was punished for getting angry. There are many, many reasons. There is Don Isaac Abarbanel, who came after the Ramban and the Rambam and Rashi. He had a long explanation on this, and basically explained why everybody's wrong. Which is great, but then you have to come up with an answer, right? So you remember? And I believe it was him who came up with this proposal. Let's remember how many staffs are there. How many staffs are there?
13.
Sticks. What? No, how many sticks?
Staffs.
Staff. How many sticks are there? Right? So when Moshe comes out, he performs all these miracles in Egypt, and he waves over the sea, and he splits the sea, and all this is fantastic, right? Aaron
had a staff. And there is each leader of the tribes have one.
Okay, but the staff, but Aaron has a staff, which we read about last week in Parshat Korah.
Right?
Aaron's staff blooms, and what do they do with that staff, if everybody remembers? And we're not going to have time to go through it in the text, because I got to go. But what they do is that they put it next to the ark, and it was there to be a reminder not to rebel. Right? This is what happens when you rebel, and this is a reminder of who the true leaders are. According to this explanation, which is a fascinating explanation, I don't know if it's true or not, right? Again, there's holes in every argument. It says that God tells Moshe to take his staff, which, incidentally, we have no idea why, because if he's not using the staff, what does he need it for? Right? There's another explanation that actually he was told to throw away the staff. But that's another that's another time, another class of fantastic idea here. Nonetheless, according to the Abarbanel, Moshe takes the wrong staff. But why does he take the wrong staff? Well, let's remember, the staff of Moshe versus the staff of Aaron. The staff of Moshe represents the miracles that God performed. What does the staff of Aaron represent? The allegiance to leadership. Don't rebel. Right? Moshe, who comes up and hears these people complain, and what's he thinking? I can't believe we're doing this again. Right? Oh my God. We've been 40 years. The same Jews don't change at all. They're exactly the same. All they do is kvetch. And he says, Shimu Nahamarim, listen up, you rebels. I have the stick. The stick, the miraculous stick that I have. The stick that says, don't mess with me and my brother. Because I'm a leader. Right? And so what God says is, no. You took the wrong stick. This is about miracles and God providing for you. It's not about leadership. That was a different thing. This is not a rebellion like it was in Korach of last week's portion. This is about allegiance to God, that God's going to provide for them. Remember, these people haven't seen the same miracles as the previous generation. They're a new generation. They need to see miracles, right? When the Ramban explains that what Moshe did wrong was by hitting the rock, they attributed the miracle to him, as opposed to if he was spoken to the rock, they would attribute it to God. But more so, according to this explanation, he should have taken, he took the wrong stick. By taking the stick that was God's stick for Moshe to perform God's miracles versus the stick of leadership against rebellion, he would have proven to the people that this is all about allegiance to God. Instead, he did it about himself. And therefore, that's why he was punished. There is so much more, but unfortunately I have to go. In the meantime, I want to thank everybody. Maybe we'll get a chance to spend more time on Shabbat.